Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild, Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. We're going to be doing a series over the next several weeks. I've invited a few guys on that know a thing or two about elk hunting, and I'm going to be throwing them very similar scenarios that you may encounter or that most guys who've done any kind of elk hunting have encountered on their hunts and see how they would handle it. And even though a lot of the questions will be the same, a lot of scenarios will be the same, it's very interesting to listen to the different approaches from these guys that seem to get it done year in and year out. And so I think it's a really neat perspective and a cool way to learn that way. When you're presented with those scenarios or those situations out in the field, you'll be able to apply it. I also want to urge you guys to take the time and please go on iTunes or the Podbean app. Give us a review. It's super important for us. Helps the ratings, helps keep us ahead of everything, helps us keep this podcast free, to be honest with you. So if you get out there and do that for me, I would appreciate it. And please go check out Phoenix Shooting Bags. They're our number one sponsor, and they put out an awesome product, and we appreciate them. And I'd appreciate it if you could go check them out. Let's roll into this next episode. Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild, Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today, we're back on with Michael Batiste of the Elk Calling Academy, and we're going to throw a few more scenarios at him and pick his brain and see how he'd handle them. What's going on, Mike?
Not much. How are you doing? Good to be back for round two of this.
Yeah, man, I'm all right. It's been a little stressful day. Things are not going my way, but as you can see, we were having a little technical difficulty, and I think we're continuing to because you're sounding a little wavery, but hopefully it'll fix itself here.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, we'll see. If it doesn't, I'll stop you.
Okay.
So last time we talked about a few different things and how you'd handle them. We're going to throw a few more at you and kind of go from there and see how you'd handle those ones.
Perfect. Yeah, those were a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to what else you got to throw my way.
Awesome. So the first one's kind of that dream day of hunting, you know, that dream day that everybody hopes for in the elk woods. Uh-huh. You drop down into this canyon and you hit the jackpot. There's bulls screaming literally in every direction. So many that you don't even know which one to go after. So every time you call, they're answering back. And it's just one of those really intense mornings. What are you doing, one, to determine which one you're going to go after first or which one you're going to go after, period? And how do you plan on getting him killed?
Great question. You know, this is one that has kind of evolved over the years. I've been pretty blessed to be in this situation. I remember a place that, you know, used to hunt here in Idaho. God, it was incredible. You'd go there in the evening and, you know, you'd bugle and you would just have bulls every different direction that were working their way down to where you were. And early on, it was, you know, really paying attention to the bugles. And it was like, okay, which one sounds biggest? Okay, that's the one we're going after. And the only problem with that is we would bump some of those other bulls that were bugling on the way to get to that one. And so now we kind of, you know, we kind of take a different approach about it. You know, we kind of do some quick calculations and analyzing real quick. And it's, okay, where are each of these bulls at? What time in the morning is it? You know, are they on the move or are they stationary? You know, paying attention to where they're bugling from, whether they're in the same spot, how long it's going to take us to get to them. And so then we're going to take that information and then we're just going to kind of set them up like dominoes. Okay, we're going to hit this one first. And it's always set so that when we go to that first one, we're not bumping anything else. So if we do something stupid in the setup or our setup's wrong or this or that, and we booger that one, we haven't affected any of the others. So then we can just go from one contact to the next contact to the next contact. And, you know, hopefully get one of them on the ground sooner rather than later. But yeah, we're always, you know, setting that up in those situations that we always have a backup plan. You know, we always have that other bull bugling. We always have that other opportunity that we can, you know, move on to the next. Cause like you said, that's a dream day. That's a dream morning where you have multiple mm-hmm. bulls bugling. And so really we're out there for opportunities. You know, the more opportunities we have, the higher chance of success that we have. So by kind of setting them up in, you know, kind of that domino effect, you're basically giving yourself multiple opportunities. Now, also too, if it's early in the morning and a lot of those bulls are on the move and you can hear where their bugles are on the move, you know, then again, then you're kind of doing those quick calcs of which one can I get on to quickly? You know, where are they heading to? What route do we need to go to kind of cut them off? Where are the others going to go? And so we don't necessarily just focus on that immediate first encounter. We're always having those contingency and backup plans in the back of our head too, because we make mistakes. I mean, you know, wind currents could shift on you, or, you know, that bull's coming to you while you're working to him. There's a lot of factors that we can't control. And so we want to set as many of these up that we can just go from one to the other to the other. And like I said, hopefully get one of them on the ground sooner rather than having to go through all of them and screw up every situation encounter with them.
Right. So let's say this was in a unit that you took 10 years to draw and it wasn't a general unit. Mm-hmm. What are you doing? How are you targeting a bull? Let's say the bull that you think that you want, because he sounds the biggest, has got two or three other bulls in between you and them.
That's the hard part there, determining based off sound. I mean, yeah, you can get pretty close and you go, okay, that's a dominant bull. He's got that deep bottom end, that deep guttural. You know, he's definitely. But, you know, then we're going to kind of take that approach a little bit differently in a coveted area, that we're still going to kind of do the same approach to where, you know, we can start picking through them without boogering, but we want to kind of maybe get close enough so we can get eyes on first. And then if we determine, and okay, you know, no, that one's not worth putting this tag on, then we're going to slip to the next and slip to the next. I've had it happen. In fact, I remember one time was sitting there on a ridge, and it was just kind of starting to transition from that midday to that evening time. And I heard this bull over across the way, and he just did this, just this little high pitch, just little whistle. And I was like, okay, they're starting to get up and get moving. And he whistled again, and I kind of threw the binos up, and he was a decent 5x5 that had three or four cows with him. And I'm like, oh, he's not a bad bull. And then from down on the bottom, I just heard this, just this deep roar. And I was like, oh, the mamma jamma of the mountains coming out. That other bull kind of woke him up. And I'm hearing these two, and the one up high just kept that little whistle, and the one down below just this really deep guttural. And I'm constantly scanning the bottom with the binos, and I see this little spindly 3x4 raghorn step out. And I was like, okay, so there's the satellite. The herd bull is going to come out soon. And all of a sudden, he laid his head back and he just let go of that. And I was like, there is no way that little guy is doing that. And that bigger bull is just whistling. And after about 10 minutes, every single cow left that decent 5x5 and went down towards that spindly looking bull just because of how he sounded. And man, that 5x5 all of a sudden uncorked a challenge bugle that shook the bark off the trees. And he just stormed down the face of that other side of the draw and just went down and rolled that spindly bull and chased him back down the bottom of the draw, rounded up his cows, and he pranced right back up to where he was. And then he finally turned around and laid his head back and just uncorked a really good bugle. But I mean, if I was just going off sound only, I would have put all my eggs in the basket on that spindly bull just because of how he sounded.
Right.
So, and you know, depending on the time of year too, you know, some of these bulls bugling so much, they get a little hoarse that they kind of, you know, cut out. They kind of get that Peter Brady going through puberty on the Brady Bunch type voice. and so sometimes it's hard to tell. It really is. So in that case, in a coveted, you know, we're still going to kind of take similar of the same approach, you know, moving so that we can lay eyes on each of them without bumping. But if we do lay eyes on and we determine it's a bull that, you know, we really don't want, we're not too concerned about bumping him out of the way to, you know, get to another one at that point.
Cool. So one of the other questions I get all the time that people are faced with, and I've been faced with myself too. Actually, I've been faced with this many, many, many times. You get that bull that's answering you all morning long. Mm-hmm. You know, he lets you get to a couple hundred, even 150 yards. He lets you get pretty darn close. Uh-huh. And every time you get into that little, that zone, he takes his cows and he moves a couple hundred yards away. He doesn't get out of Dodge, but he just moves a few hundred yards away and he just keeps, you keep playing cat and mouse with him.
Right.
What are you doing to get this bull on the ground?
You know, and I've been in that situation too, and I've talked to a lot of people in that same situation. And a good majority of the times in that situation, it's because the bull is still in his transitional corridor. You know, he's still in that transitional area between his feeding and his bedding ground. You know, bulls are tough to kill in those transitional areas sometimes because they have that destination in mind of where they want to get to. And they basically just want to get there, but they'll answer you nonstop as they're moving. And basically what they're doing is just they're making contact with you saying, hey, we're moving this direction. Come on with us. And it could be that they're still just kind of milling and doing some feeding as they're going. And that's why sometimes you can kind of catch up to them and then move on, then catch up again and move on. But a lot of times in that, it's I'm going to take a look at which direction he's going, and I'm going to take a look at OnX real quick and kind of guess, okay, he's probably heading to this area to bed down, and I'm going to try to get parallel with him or in front of him a little bit and kind of meet him in that area where he's wanting to go. The other thing that I'm also going to do is I'm going to pay attention to how he's answering me and what he's answering. You know, is he answering, you know, location bugles with location bugles, or is he answering my bugles kind of timidly? Because that's kind of all any, you know, that's kind of some information that you want to gather real quick. God, I remember.
Okay.
I remember we had a bull once that, you know, he would sit there and he would do the same thing. He would answer every single time, but the difference was when we threw out a bugle, he would just be, ooh. But when we would throw out a cow sound, wah. You know, and he would get really, really excited. And so we immediately knew, okay, we're dealing with a smaller bull. And we knew in this area that there was a herd bull with a couple of satellites. And so I immediately knew we're dealing with one of the satellites. He's probably already gotten his butt kicked by that herd bull. He's been pushed out from that herd bull because that herd bull is focusing on breeding cows and just doesn't want this younger bull away. So now you have this younger bull that's out there kind of solitude, and he's looking for friends. He's looking for company. And so he's going to be kind of timid about answering to that other bull, but really excited on the cow sounds. And when we set up on him, I focused exclusively on the cow sounds and pulled him into 18 yards for Bryce. So it's kind of, you know, what is he answering and how is he answering and what sounds are you doing? And, you know, kind of gathering all that information of kind of the age class of the bull that you're working, what his mindset is, and taking all of that information and then adjusting what you're doing to give him really what he's looking for and really what he's interested in at that moment. And that's going to increase your chances to get that bull in.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm going to give you a really even more specific scenario. Okay. This has happened to me several times. It happened to me last year, the year before, both times in Oregon. And it's happened to me here in Arizona, too, where I know they got cows. Uh-huh. And I've gotten in close enough. I've challenged them. They've been defensive, you know, warning me to stay back. They round up their cows and they move on a little bit. Get in close again, hammer them. Same thing. Keep going. Keep moving mm-hmm. away. And like they just don't want to stand. Like they don't want to stand and fight.
Right.
They're telling you that, you know, F you or whatever, but they don't want to stand and fight.
Right. That's that scenario again, that, you know, what is their mindset? You know, it's I hate to use this phrase, but today's society, we have it. Keyboard warriors, you know, that in chat rooms and on talks and this and that, you know, they when they're behind their keyboard, they're ultra tough. But, you know, if you ever run into these individuals in person, it's, you know, I didn't really mean it that way. Or no, that's not what I was saying. And it's like, yeah, that's exactly what you're saying. And elk can be that same way, too, that, you know, especially a bull that has a few cows. And if you're ultra aggressive from a distance. I mean, the cows are paying attention to that, because remember, the cows choose the bulls, not the bulls choose the cows. So if you're over there sounding like a dominant bull, and you know the cows are sitting there going, man, that dude over there sounds, you know, pretty good. So he's all of a sudden getting, you know, dominant from a distance. But then once you get close, and it could be a few things. It could be that he's leading the cows away, or it could be that the cows are like, you know what? No, this is our bull. We're choosing him. We're not interested in any other bull. We're just going to take our guy kind of away a little bit here and kind of do our thing with him. And so it's one of those things where I'm going to take that different approach, where I've tried a few times of calling to him or calling to his cows. Neither one's working because they keep moving away, moving away. So this is where I was saying that I would get parallel or try to get even with them without making a sound. And then I'm going to set up and tell my story. You know, that's a great example of breaking into that breeding sequence, because now I'm focused on my own story. I'm my own little herd that is focused within my own little herd. We don't care what's going on over there. And we're going to focus on our story. We're going to focus on our little group, our little family, our communication within each other. And that will play on the curiosity of him. Because again, like I said, especially as you start ramping that up and you're portraying this bull over here that has this hot cow, and you know, maybe he is a dominant bull or maybe he isn't, but he's, the fact that he has cows, he's quickly going to run around and check each of his cows. And it's going to be that scenario that we talked about, you know, the other day, where he's going to check all of his cows real quick and go, yeah, man, none of my ladies are, you know, ready, but you know what, that dude over there has one, and maybe I'm going to go that way. So you kind of take a different approach, which is instead of calling to him or at him, you focus on your own story and play on his instincts and his curiosity to all of a, it's almost like you're flipping the script on him. Like now he's the hunted, or he's the hunter and you're the hunted. And now he's going to come pursue you.
Okay. I like it. So this next scenario, you hear a bunch of cows early in the morning feeding below you. You're way up on a ridge and they're clearly down, you know, at least halfway down this ridge. You can't see them. You don't have eyes on. You're pretty sure there's a bull with them. There's just a large amount of cows that, and the rut's going strong. It's fairly thick, so you can't see him. And he hasn't made a peep yet. What are you doing to, one, verify that there is a bull there?
Right.
And two, when he's got this giant harem of cows, what are you doing to get him killed?
So that is one where you want to introduce a bull vocalization, but you don't want to immediately just come ultra aggressive. That's where you're going to kind of sneak close to the cows. You want to get close, but not so close that you're going to get winded or busted or by movement or this or that. So, you know, depending on how thick the vegetation is, you're going to want to slip kind of close, and then you're going to start going into kind of those huffs, grunts, and whines that we talked about last time. And then you start going into a roundup bugle, you know, trying to call his cows to you, you know, and okay, you're all of a sudden this new bull that's trying to get these cows to come to you. And then you do that roundup bugle a few times, then all of a sudden, then you introduce a cow sound with that roundup bugle. Now in his mind, the picture that you're painting is that you're another bull that kind of slipped in completely quietly, started sweet talking to his ladies. And then as soon as you introduce that cow sound, now all of a sudden he's like thinking, crap, especially if it's a large herd, like you talked about. Now all of a sudden he's like, dang it, one of my ladies went to this new dude that just came into my backyard and he's taken one of my ladies.
Right.
And this works really, really well, especially if that bull is on the other side of the cows, because you're going to see him rip right through the middle of those cows like Moses parting the Red Sea to get to you and run you off, because he's already, especially, you know, as the rut progresses, he's already in such a defensive mode of protecting those cows and keeping those cows on a tight, short leash and not so much a tight, short leash. He's keeping tabs on them. He knows where they're at. But he's also very aware, too, of other bulls sneaking in and trying to, you know, cut a cow loose. And you can, you know, if he's not really jumping on that immediately. You kind of keep going with those huffs, grunts, and whines, and you kind of ramp up your cow sounds a little bit, you know, kind of, yeah, like this aggravated cow that it almost gives the appearance, it almost gives this appearance of a younger bull coming in and trying to hook one of these cows and force her out of the group, and she's not wanting to go.
Gotcha.
That's what's going to click on that protective instinct of him to come run you off and get his cow back, because he did all this work to get them together.
Right. Yeah. Doesn't want to lose the harem that he took a while building, and who knows how many other bulls he's already fought to get it. And
oh, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's kind of just, you know, playing on those herd dynamics and those instincts and you know, how they operate and how they are. And it's kind of fun to watch them sometimes, you know, like mm-hmm. the other day that, you know, we kind of talked about, you know, a bull that has a cow in estrus with no other bulls around versus a defensive bull that has that same hot cow with multiple bulls around. So, and they're used to that. They're used to younger bulls sneaking in, not even making a peep and trying to be sneaky, sly.
Yeah, no, I definitely happens a lot. You see it all the time.
Oh, yeah.
I was just telling a story today to Jason Phelps about, I was actually hunting this giant bull in Arizona back in 2013, and he was pushing 400, and he had two pretty big bulls, actually, like a 340 and a, you know, that 310-ish type mark, 300. Mm-hmm. And they were just harassing the shit out of him. They just kept coming in trying to cut, you know, cut cows out of the herd. And that's all he did for 2 hours that I watched them. Just, he'd run one off and the other one was slipping behind. They were like tag teaming.
Oh, yeah. We had that same thing happen when we were hunting in Montana, and you know, the herd bull, he was in that 360, 370 class, and a couple of satellites that were pestering him were in that 310, 320 range, which is funny because, you know, we got into a herd on the next draw over that the largest bull in that herd was probably 295, 300. So those 320s could have very easily just gone up over the ridge, dropped down in the next drainage. They could have been the herd bull with, you know, 6 to 10 cows that were in that other drainage. But because that large herd bull had the number of cows that he did, those satellite bulls wouldn't leave them. They just constantly just pestered the heck out of them. And that's why I, you know, I'll get people asking me that, yeah, you know, we got in on this herd bull with cows and we just screamed at him and he just wouldn't leave. And I'm like, how are you being any different than the number of other satellite bulls that he deals with on a daily basis?
That's just it. Yeah, he's probably going to react to you. He's probably going to make us, you know, he's going to make a defensive sound,
right,
and posture and whatever. But that's what he's dealing with every day, all day long, you know. And if you're not doing something that says, hey, I'm potentially going to get this cow, or I do have a cow, he's not going to come over, you know?
No, because he's going to stay right there by his cows, because you're at a distance far enough back that you have to stay out of sight, because you know you can't get up close enough to him. So he's just going to hang right by those cows, wait for this pesky little satellite bull that's screaming from 80 yards away or 100 yards away. He's going to stand right there until he visually sees that satellite bull coming in, and then he is basically posturing, defensing, and running that smaller bull off, because then he has visual confirmation and he knows, okay, yeah, you're close enough to bust my bubble. You're close enough to be a problem now. But where we as people have to stay far enough back, why would, especially if he's used to being pestered by multiple other different bulls, why would he leave his cows and walk 100 yards away to you to open up the door for one of those other bulls to come in the back door and steal his
right
cows?
Right. Absolutely. Makes perfect sense. And I agree. So I got one last scenario for you.
Okay.
You're hunting pretty open timber.
Yep.
Okay. And you've been on a herd all morning long, and you finally catch up to them, and you get to a spot and you can see them through the trees. It's that open at 150 yards.
Mm.
Okay. But you really can't. I mean, you could probably cut the distance a little bit, maybe 20, 30 yards, but eventually one of them is going to pick you off because, you know, you're going to be going from tree to tree. It's open mm-hmm. enough. It's not a wide open prairie, but it's, you know,
yeah.
trees every 30 yards or so, you know, and no undergrowth, no low bushes. Okay. So how are you playing this situation out?
So two things. First, I'm going to look at topography. Are there any little creek drainages or something, or just as some sort of change in elevation that I can call from and be hidden that creates that curiosity to where they have to come up to the edge to look over to where that call is coming from? If it's completely flat, then basically I'm breaking out the ultimate predator decoy. I don't know if you're familiar with those decoys or not, but
oh yeah.
Okay. So, you know, that being mounted.
I'm good friends with Danny.
Okay. So, you know, mounting one of those ultimate predator decoys on the front of the bow in situations like that is very effective, you know, because one, it actually, you know, gives them something because they can see so far that when you make a vocalization and they look over that direction, well, now they have visual stimulation also because they see that elk silhouette. And because it's in front of you, it's breaking up your human form. It's breaking up your human outline because that decoy is large enough to, you know, kind of tuck back behind and do that. But you have that little sliver window that you're shooting through that you can see what's going on. And, you know, you can take your time and just do some light calling and work towards them. I mean, I've did this a couple of years ago that, you know, working some bulls and they kind of just fed right off this little knob and I was solo. So before I moved and got on them again, I went ahead and popped that decoy out and put it on the front of the bow and just started, you know, working my way towards them, just kind of doing some light everyday cow calling, just normal herd communication, you know, talk. Mm-hmm. And all I could see was, you know, spike. I couldn't see where the bigger bull was, and I could see the body of the other bull right there. And so I was like, you know, I'm going to test this decoy. I'm just going to walk right towards that spike. I'm going to walk towards, because they were still kind of feeding. I said, I'm going to walk right towards those guys and just see how close I can get. And I'm going to act like a cow that is feeding. I'm not going to walk directly at them because that's what a predator does. I'm going to kind of meander like they do. And I'm going to pull some leaves off a bush, you know, making sure my movements are staying, you know, behind that. And God, I probably got within 35, 40 yards of, you know, the closest bull. And it was fairly open. I mean, you know, there was huckleberry bushes, you know, that kind of came up to knee level or mid thigh level, but the trees were, you know, like you said, every 30, 40 yards, pretty dang open. But yeah, I was really, really surprised. And I mean, I would call and I would just kind of be moving and they would pick their heads up a few times and just kind of look at me and just go back to feeding. They were very calm. They were very relaxed. So yeah, in that scenario, I'm definitely going to break out a decoy, especially something that I can mount on the bow that I can be hands-free and move towards them. So, and it's one of those things sometimes that you get close enough and you've been making that sound that then you play on that curiosity to where they come to you.
Right. I haven't had really good success with decoys when it comes to calling things. Now, I've used like decoys with a lot of success in South Dakota and like antelope hunting or mule deer hunting, and I use a cow or something, but it's mainly to hide because I got to cross big open areas, you know, stuff like that. I've had great success with, but even predator calling, I don't even use decoys. I've tried it a couple times. Matter of fact, I had a hunt, I think it might have been 2014, and yeah, because I drew back to back years here in Arizona. It's 2014. I had the Montana decoy, and it was the one that you can like hang from a tree.
Right.
Don't remember which. I think that's what's his name's model. My God, I can't think of his name right now.
Eichler.
Thank you. It was his model cow, and I had a rise between me and the bull. Actually, it was two bulls. It was satellite bull and the herd bull, but I would have been happy with either one. And I had my buddy Billy was behind me calling. And he had the decoy hanging in the tree right in front of him. And he was calling by the tree again. It's very open situation, but we had a rise, you know, we had that working for us. So we knew they had to at least come to the top to look down to see. And this bull comes up and the satellite bull comes straight at me and he's facing me head on. I'm at full draw already. And he stops and I'm like, man, this is 20 yards. I'm going to be able to, I could put this right where I need to put it, even though he's faced right at me. And the wind blew the decoy and made it like flop. And so, right. and it was just perfect timing. It did that right as I went to shoot. And like, I was just squeezing off the trigger when it did that. And he like jumped and ran and he turned 180 and I hit him right in the ass. So it was a really shitty situation because we didn't find that, you know, we did find that bull the next morning. He was bugling and running cows around. So he didn't give a shit that I hit him in the ass. And I knew it was him because I could see the wound on his butt cheek.
Right.
And the arrow had fell out. So yeah, that was the last time I used a decoy for elk hunting. I just got tired of carrying them around, but it's nice to see that, you know, people who have success with them. I like to, you know, I'm not against them for you know, by any means. I always try to look for ways that I don't need them.
Right. And I don't use them a ton either. There's definitely situations where I think they are, you know, beneficial. But yeah, I kind of take the same approach as you do. As you know, I'm going to use other things like topography or vegetation or, you know, this or that, that, you know, forces them to come around that bank of bushes to see where I'm calling from, or come all the way up to the top of that knob or the top of that little ridge to look down the other side to see, you know, where that calling was coming from. To me, I think, you know, those, because the one thing about decoys is, especially if you have a decoy that has a face on it, you know, that bull is going to get to the point and he's going to stop and he's going to lock eyes with that cow.
Right.
Your decoy. And then all of a sudden he's going to stand there and he's going, God, this is the strangest cow I've ever seen. She hasn't blinked. She hasn't get rid of a fly. She hasn't moved anything. Because, I mean, even when a bull, if you sat there and watched an elk, even when they're standing there staring mm-hmm. your direction, their ears are still constantly moving. Their ears are still constantly checking for sound in different directions.
Right.
They can stand like a statue, but those ears are still moving. And I think that's the drawback. And I did the same thing that you did, because one of the favorite decoys that I used to use was the Montana decoy rump.
Okay.
And I did the same thing because I didn't like taking the poles.
Oh, because they're annoying.
So I cut a couple of holes and, you know, tied some paracord on it so that I could do the same thing, so that I could hang it on a branch or this or that. But yeah, you're exactly right. You get on a day where there's a decent breeze or a decent wind and man, that thing's flopping like a kite on that branch. And it's like, well, any realism that we tried to get, it just went right out the window.
Yeah.
Went completely took that away.
Yeah. I'm not, like I said, I'm not against them. I'm definitely going to try them again. And I know the bow mounted ones are kind of nice. I know guys that use them for mule deer all the time during a rut and have tremendous success with them. But as far as me and the elk woods, for some reason, I don't know. The few times that I use it, I used it again once for my cousin Anthony had a tag here in 6B and we end up getting a shot, but it almost blew up because of the decoy. Anthony unfortunately made he shot high and hit the bull in no man's land. But I had a good setup too. Again, we set up with I had a little rise. I got Anthony ahead of me and to the left of me, and I set the decoy on the tree because we ran out of cover anyway. We weren't going to be able to get any closer. So I set the decoy right there and I was calling right behind the decoy. That bull came right up, and as soon as he saw the decoy, he kind of like stopped and he was staring at it. And I feel like if I didn't have the decoy there, he would have just kept on coming up and stopped at the very top of the rise.
Sure.
Anthony still had a shot. So we did our job and it still worked. But I feel like had I not had the decoy, he would have came to the very top and stood at the very top and gave Anthony a perfect broadside shot and maybe a little bit more time to range him, because Anthony was worried because he had that look about him that he was going to run, you know, so he didn't range and he just guessed the range and he guessed too high. So he hit high.
The decoy that we use a lot of times is the Butthead from Native by Carlton.
Okay.
Just because it has that three-dimensional face on it. And so like your situation where you're kind of halfway behind a tree and you got the decoy there on the side of the tree and you're kind of behind it.
Right.
You can have your hand on the pole and you can just tilt it one way or another, that now all all of a sudden turns that three-dimensional face like a cow looking around, and you can reach up from the backside and flick that ear a little bit. So, you know, here's this cow looking to the left a little bit, and all of a sudden that right ear, you know, flicks that fly away, and mm-hmm. then she kind of looks back to the right, and then she kind of, you know, looks back at him. Now, here's the critical thing too, is because remember, elk can do vocalizations with their mouth open or mouth closed. Right. So if you're going to do any cow sounds, especially if that bull's sitting there looking at that decoy, you need to make sure that you're doing it at an audible level that matches a cow doing it with the mouth closed.
Because
it's not a puppet. You're not reaching up there and opening the mouth of this cow and, you know, making a cow sound. So you have to match. And is it really that important? Is it really that critical? Well, you know what? I'm sure that a bull looking at a cow knows the difference between when she opens her mouth and a sound comes out versus when she just has her lips closed and a sound comes out.
Right. It's going back to what we said the other day. It's creating the illusion. Any little piece of the puzzle you can add to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
The more real you can make it, the better off you're going to be.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it just goes back to, you know, the question, you know, that I mentioned on Tuesday that I ask, you know, a lot of the Elk Calling Academy members when we talk about situations is, you know, are you calling like an elk or are you calling like a human?
Right. Well, awesome, man. That's all I got for you. I want to thank you for coming back on and hammering out these with us. And
you bet. We survived. Always survived technical difficulties.
For the most part, we made it through unscathed. We'll see how the recording turns out.
Okay.
Oh man, I tell you what, these last few weeks, I don't know what's going on. I haven't changed anything. My equipment's all the same, but for some reason, I think the internet's got coronavirus or some shit. But it hasn't been what it normally is. So
no, and I think there's a lot more people online now because, you know, I do a lot of lessons with students that are outside of the Boise area, and I use the Zoom video conferencing, and that's one of the things that I notice is there's a much bigger delay now than what there normally is. And I've talked to a lot of people and they're like, oh yeah, we do our family meetings and gatherings with Zoom and we're all in our own places and we get on Zoom and we talk. And it's like, okay, I just think there's a lot more people online.
Makes perfect sense. All right, man. Well, real quick, where can the listeners find out about you and check out your Elk Calling Academy?
You bet. So you can go to elkcallingacademy.com. That is right now takes to the Patreon page, which is that, you know, it's a paid subscription. It's $15 a month, but there's all kinds of instructional videos and tutorials. And every 2 weeks, I do a live Q&A broadcast in there just for those herd members. In fact, today I just uploaded the video for, we're kind of doing an e-scouting challenge right now where I just drop in GPS coordinates and the herd members use the tools that I gave them tutorials on to scout these areas, you know, online. And then I give them 2 weeks and then I record a video of me going in and scouting that area with the tools. And I just uploaded the latest video on that. You know, they can also find Elk Calling Academy on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And hopefully here by July, we're going to have our full website up and running with the full-blown e-course and the shop for all the branded merchandise. And, you know, we'll make those announcements along, you know, across all the social media platforms. And for all the Patreon herd members, we'll gravitate those guys over onto the e-course.
Awesome, man. Thanks again for coming on and look forward to seeing how you do this season.
Been my pleasure. Always fun sitting down and talking with you. And best of luck this season if I don't talk to you before then.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Right. You too.
Bye.